order. Let the record reflect that the time is 8:25 a.m. on Thursday, March 15th. And let the record reflect that there is a quorum. Present are Co-Chair Fairclough, Representative Olson, Representative Newman, and myself, Co-Chair Ledoux. At this time, I'd like to remind everybody to turn off their cell phones. The purpose of our meeting today is to take up the following legislation. House Bill 169, an act relating to municipal impoundment and forfeiture. And additionally, if time permits, we will hear more on HB 101, an act relating to uniform traffic laws. Would the sponsor of HB 169 like to come forward and present this bill?
Thank you. Good morning. This is Berta Gardner, represent Midtown Anchorage. And thank you for hearing the bill, both the co-chairs. House Bill 169, we call it the scofflaw bill, was actually brought to me by a member of the Anchorage Assembly who said that Anchorage was looking for a way of dealing with scofflaws, people who had long records and over $1,000 in unpaid traffic fines. And part of the problem is that a lot of these people do not have any respect for the rule of law. The people that have large numbers of unpaid traffic fines often have huge rap sheets. We've included just one page of examples. We gave them all. We had an earlier packet with just one. There's one person on there that I personally know. He's one of the higher ticket holders. He has a rap sheet that includes charges of kidnapping, prostitution, drug cooking and selling, domestic violence, sexual assault. I mean, just long list of charges back since childhood, just about. And I think that, according to the Anchorage Police Department, that's fairly typical. So the scofflaw legislation focuses on allowing municipalities to impound vehicles of people who have accumulated a certain level. We're proposing $1,000 in unpaid fines, and allows them to impound the vehicles and take these people off the streets. It sort of is to deal with not just the vehicles, but to put people on notice, people who disregard the law, on notice that the municipality is watching them, paying attention. It's something akin to what Rudy Giuliani did in New York City when he started cracking down on panhandlers and the windshield washer people and things as a way to say, have a zero tolerance. Sometimes if you deal with the little things, the big things follow along. So in some ways, this may end up being a very good crime-fighting tool. It's a zero cost to the state. It's permissive language for municipalities who choose to participate or not. And I think it has a fairly broad support among the people we've talked with, police departments and such.
Representative Gardner, I've got a question for you. It talks in terms of motor vehicle used by a person as opposed to motor vehicle owned by a person. So do you anticipate that if somebody has lent their car, for example, to a neighbor, and that car could be impounded if the neighbor fits this criteria? Is that your intention?
Yes, Madam Chair, potentially that is a possibility. The municipalities, of course, that enact their own regulations and set this in motion are still answerable to their own voters. So they can address that in a way that they wish to. But a lot of times when drivers have had their licenses pulled because so many points on their license or because of drunk driving, even if their cars are ruined in an accident, it doesn't mean people quit driving. They find other ways to get access to a car. Now, if somebody really unknowingly lends their car to such a person and it's confiscated, I would fully expect that municipalities would have a way of determining that and making allowance for it. This bill simply sets a framework that allows them to move forward with their own regulations.
Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, you just said that you would expect municipalities to come up with a system. Would you, do you have any intent language that you could maybe put on the record as to how you would want to see that implied so that there is some legislative intent implied towards that instance?
Through the chair, Representative Newman, I don't think that that's necessary. The municipalities have elected officials who are answerable to their people, and they'll take up the matter as they see fit for their community. We're simply providing them a tool to address local issues if they choose to do it, to use it.
Do you? Go ahead.
And I just had a couple other questions, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, what collection effort is now? Is there a collection effort to try and vehicles?
Through the chair, there is a collection effort, but I don't think municipalities by and large spend a great deal of money in attempting to collect these things, and Representative Faircloth may actually know more about that than we do.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Newman. In the city of Anchorage, the first thing that the municipality does is try to attach to permanent fund dividend checks, but that is successful, but we're usually two or three down the line. The state comes in first for that. They do have a collection agency that they sometimes turn to, but with 70 tickets and $9,000 in fines, these people are pretty good at sidestepping the law and the people that are trying to collect them. So they do make an effort. I can't tell you on each one how much of an effort, but they are making an effort, and these people are getting through loopholes in the law, basically.
If I may add just two more questions, so I'll just ask the questions and you can. First off is how are errors handled? You know, if they made a mistake, the municipality made a mistake on who they were going after. I know that that was brought to me by staff because they had bought a car from a dealer and the dealer didn't transfer a title. And they found the police department at their door one day. and so with their car, because of something that was done that way. So how would errors be handled? And then which vehicle would be taken if a person owns several vehicles? I don't know if they track this back to their driver's license or the vehicle license plate number, then through their driver's license. And what's the chain of events on how that works?
Through the chair, I think what happens is when somebody's pulled over for something else, or a car is illegally parked or something like that, and the police have reason to check into the license plate or to stop the driver and talk with the driver, I don't expect that municipalities will be out actively looking for vehicles to seize. It's just a tool to use when someone comes to their attention for something else. I don't believe that we have the manpower across this state to be searching for that kind of thing. And when an error is made, I think it's possible for errors to be made in any kind of arrest or consequence, and there is recourse in current statute. If someone makes a mistake, you go to the judge or appeal it or do whatever normally you would do.
Just a comment. I would think with $7.5 million worth of fines, and that's just a fine, certainly a vehicle is worth more than the fine on a lot of these. Well, $9,000, I'm not quite sure. But this will certainly incentivize some of the municipalities to get after it and start. But I don't think that that's a bad thing, because it's the same person who parks in the handicapped spot every time they go into the stores.
Through the chair, I'd just like to emphasize parking tickets aren't the accumulated fines we're looking for. Failure to have current tags isn't the kind of thing. These are moving violations that are accumulated, and I think that finding the person and confiscating their vehicle doesn't necessarily mean that they come up with the money. And it's not actually a fundraising effort. It's an effort to address the criminal behavior and the failure to heed consequences in terms of their road behavior as well as other areas of their life. So it's sort of spreading a net. But I'd be very surprised if most of these people would be able to write a check or even have assets worth that, legal assets.
Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, the only other comment I have is I'm wondering about a person who is a first-time offender that has a violation that might exceed $1,000 and then no time, and the a local authority trying to take the vehicle right at that point. Should there be a provision for some kind of delinquency number of days?
I think that would be fine, or possibly accumulated number of tickets, you know, of having three or more tickets totaling at least $1,000. I don't know really how many fines are over $1,000 to begin with.
Neither do I, but
yeah.
Through the chair, but that's my only caution mm-hmm. for there, and
yeah,
so maybe there is additional information.
Madam Chair, if my aide, as often happens, our staff sometimes know more than we do about certain matters. This is Iris Matthews.
For the record, Iris Matthews, staff to Representative Gardner. The reason we included so many pages in the packet was to give a demonstration of that those are all the offenders in the municipality of Anchorage who have over $1,000. That was the cutoff in that packet. And as you can see, the average even at the lower end is 4 to 5 citations. We worked with the municipality to set that threshold at 1,000 because it was still several unpaid fines. And I think for a fine to be considered unpaid, and I think we might have someone online that can speak with a little more accuracy to this, you usually have a threshold already. You have 30 days to pay your fine. So I don't think a fine would be considered delinquent or unpaid during that time. But after that date has passed, then your time is up.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I might respond. This doesn't say delinquent, though. In your amendment for number 5, it says motor vehicles used by a person who has 1,000 or more in unpaid traffic fines for violations. It doesn't say delinquent. So if it was delinquent, then that hits the 30-day marker that I'm talking about. But I do accept what you're saying is that all instances show on that it's multiple fines that had to get there. But that was the – I'll wait till I hear from other people online. Thank you.
I've got one more question, Representative Gardner. You discussed with – legal, whether there are any constitutional implications of impounding a car which doesn't belong to the person.
For the record, Iris Matthews, we haven't discussed that particularly, but we're putting it right in the statute where we talk about impounding other vehicles. And if someone is, say, arrested for a DUI, it doesn't matter whose car they're driving, that car is impounded at that time. And then, you know, usually people were asking about the hearing process. For any sort of impoundment, there's an administrative hearing process. And I think I can't speak to the particularities of it, but generally an other owner would have the opportunity to say that doesn't belong to the person that committed the offense or to kind of plead their case at that time.
All right. Thank you. Any further questions for Representative Gardner at this point? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gardner, so if these are just moving violations that happen within municipalities, and so I'm assuming in Wasilla, the state troopers pull over a lot of people in Wasilla. And I'm trying to make the connection between the Alaska State Troopers Division and municipality police departments. With the figures that we see here, are these just from municipal police departments, or do they include Alaska State Troopers making traffic stops within municipalities, and how does the state of Alaska take advantage of this or use this as a tool?
Thank you. Through the chair, first of all, the state's not using this as a tool. The state is simply providing permissive languages for municipalities to determine whether they want to use it or not. And it's possible that Anchorage would move forward and Mat-Su would choose not to. And that's their decision, and we have no opinion on whether they should or shouldn't do that. However, when somebody is pulled over and the police officers or the troopers call in, they have information about that person's driving record, including unpaid fines. So, you know, they would have to know the law in their locality as to whether they want to do something about it or not.
Follow up.
Yes.
Representative Gardner, and I guess go back to my first question was, when we see these total citations that individuals have had, does this include citations that were just by municipal police departments, or does it include citations that were Alaska State Troopers were involved writing a citation within the municipality boundaries?
Maybe
citations on
that? I'm not sure, but I believe we have someone online that can answer that question for you.
Yes, my name is James Fornelli.
Go ahead.
And I work with the Treasury Division in Revenue Management for the Municipality of Anchorage. And in deference to the one question in conjunction with the citation list, those are strictly, exclusively citations issued by the Municipal Police Department, Anchorage Municipal Police Department. They do not include any state citations at all.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, I'd just like to recognize that Representative Cisna has just joined us. Mr. Fornelli, I've got a question for you. Within the municipality, do the state troopers even write citations? If you know.
Well, I don't know other than by conjecture that I know that there have been people that I'm aware of who have had a state trooper pull someone over within the confines of the limits, but I'm not sure if they issue the citations. I would think that they would have that flexibility, but they're issued under state code, and they have specific code numbers which don't correlate to the municipal codes.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, for the person online, can you speak to the position of the constitutionality of confiscating a used vehicle in the municipality of Anchorage?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand the question again.
The amendment proposed, do you have a copy of the bill in front of you?
No, ma'am, I don't.
The amendment, or the bill itself, is saying that we're adding a Section 5 to 2801.015, which is the ability to impound or forfeiture a vehicle inside the municipal city limits, and it's permissive language. And Representative Gardner is proposing language that will allow a motor vehicle used by a person who has $1,000 more in fines. And I'm wondering, we had a discussion earlier, I'm not sure if you were online listening to it, but we had a question that was asked if it's within constitutionally a municipality's right to take something that is being used but owned by another party.
I would not be able to address it or respond to that. I wouldn't have an answer for you on that.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner, are you finished with your presentation?
Yes, I am. Simply, I'll answer questions if you have
any
more.
All right. Thanks very much. Does any member of the committee have any more questions for Representative Gardner right now? All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'd now like to open public testimony, and we've got online, we still have online Mr. Fornelli. Did you have any additional public testimony that you'd like to offer, Mr. Fornelli?
I'm happy to clarify a couple of issues that came up in the initial presentation.
Great.
One was in conjunction with the collection effort, and I think it was Representative Fairclough who responded and was very close to the effort that is put forth. I want to make sure that you understand that we receive these cases over from the courts as an unpaid judgment, and our collection effort before they go to outside collection agencies is to send letters to the individuals at the address of record on the citation. We do utilize the garnishment of the permanent fund, but in the course of the last year, we have also begun to implement additional parts within the collection process under the due process through the courts of garnishment of bank accounts, looking at potential wage garnishments, because as judgments, we have those rights. Unfortunately, there are still a lot of people out there who don't have bank accounts or may not even be employed, but we have been relatively successful at exploring all of the various options allowed to us under due process. Second part of this is that we do then send these ultimately to an outside third-party collection agency who is contracted with a municipality who specialize in the collections of municipal debt. They have been limitedly successful, but as I think was addressed by Representative Gardner, these individuals who they are going after are basically very adept at hiding. They hide to a certain point. When they get caught, then they go hide again after the citation or after they've been cited. The other issue that kind of came up, and I can't remember who addressed the question, was in conjunction with the time frame on the delinquency, and I wanted to just cover that base relatively quickly. When the citation is issued, and we're talking about citations which are definitely in the moving violation area, as well as those for DUIs that are cited by the police department, once these citations are issued, there is a time frame that these citations are retained by the police department, allowing the individual who's been cited to pay the fine. That time frame runs approximately 45 to 60 days. Within that time frame, they are also notified not only by the receipt of the original citation, but also by mail by the police department of the fact that unless this particular dollar amount is resolved, that they would be forwarding him over to the courts. The courts then receive the unpaid citations after that time frame, that 45 to 60 days. The courts then go through a process where they either A, default the judgment because of the fact that the people have failed to comply, or the person has gone to trial and received a default judgment, perhaps even reducing the fine. And then all of those citations that are in that process are sent another letter by the courts notifying them that unless they make restitution for them, that they will be sending them over to municipal collections. Once we receive those items from the courts that have not been paid, we're approximately now as far as 60 to 90 days down line from the original citation date. We receive them, they're entered into our collection system, and they immediately are generated another letter advising them that unless they contact the collection division of the municipality or attempt to resolve the obligation that's owed, that their permanent fund, their wages, their bank accounts could be affected, that there's a potential mark that would go against their credit reports, and that ultimately the account may be assigned to an outside third-party collection agency. That takes approximately, for that whole process of the municipality, takes approximately another 60 days. So from start to finish, we are anywhere from 4 to 5 months before this action that we're addressing and the possibility of this action in this bill would take effect. So in that time frame, the individuals who are the ones who were received the citation have received as many as 3 or 4 notifications of the potential consequences for their failure to act. And as a result, if they do fail, then this is one of the consequences we are hoping would become available to the police department in the municipality to affect the public safety aspect of it.
Thank you. Representative Farrakhanoff, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm wondering, at what point do you specifically declare a fine delinquent? What point in the process?
From our perspective at the municipality collection, when we receive it from the courts, it comes over to us as a delinquent criminal fine or fee. So it has to go through the police department. The police department considered delinquent when they haven't paid, and then they forward it to the courts. The courts have their time frame, and the courts consider it delinquent when it hasn't been paid, and they forward it to us. Once we get the documents over and are able to set the case, we consider it comes over to us as a delinquent criminal fine or fee from the courts, and we usually will work that for approximately 60 days. So it comes to us as a delinquent item.
At 60 days?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Any further questions for Mr. Fornelli? Thank you.
Thank you.
Jenna Schamburg, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Yes. This legislation or the need for it came to my attention beginning in the summer of 2006.
Ms. Schamburg,
Ms. Faircloth at that time was an assembly member as well.
Janice, could you please, for the record, identify for whom you're speaking?
I'm sorry. Municipality of Anchorage Assembly.
Thank you.
We had, during public appearances, a young woman come before us who had been struck during while driving in Anchorage by a person who qualified under this legislation as a repeat offender. He had done it repeatedly to people without any punitive action, continued to do it, and eventually, as she brought to our attention, and it's conceivable, he would end up killing somebody because he simply did not care. I verified this with the Anchorage Police Department and asked them what they needed in order to take these kinds of people off the streets, and this was the type of legislation that they recommended. The police wanted it. My husband also, who is a magistrate, has brought to my attention on a regular basis people who come into the court system that he finds who come back weeks later or less under another offense without ever having cleared up the first one. So I'm getting this both from the police department and the magistrates in the court system. These repeat offenders have no hesitation about driving without a license. But if they had a car, did not have a car, they couldn't drive. So I approached Berta with a draft of an ordinance that would address this, because I was told that Anchorage could not implement such an ordinance without state support by state statute. That would have been probably late fall of 2006. A number of the questions that you asked were addressed originally in the draft legislation that I wrote as an ordinance through help of our assembly attorney. There will be an appeal process in place. During that appeal process, somebody who owns a car that they've loaned to the offender would have the opportunity to present that fact. We don't want to make it so easy for somebody to loan a car to an offender, a repeat offender, that it has no deterrence to it. So I feel that somebody who has knowingly loaned an automobile to somebody else without taking into account that person's lifestyle, the way they conduct themselves on the streets, the way they drive, should at least have to go through a little inconvenience to get the car back. But there will be an appeal process. There was no discussion in writing the ordinance for Anchorage that I originally began with that APD would be out looking for these automobiles based on license plate numbers owned by habitual offenders. But because they are repeat offenders, they present every opportunity to the police to stop them. And at that point, the police could confiscate the vehicle. The single large tickets will not trigger impound or forfeiture. I'm aware that a person driving in a construction zone with men working and speeding could rack up a fine of $1,000. So that is not the intent. But somebody who's accumulated 4 to 5 tickets as they progress through the rising chain of not being in control of their driving habits and having total disregard for the life and safety of other people on the streets. This is meant to capture them and stop them at that point. You see in your handouts, I believe, or at least Berta has records that indicate that people have, you know, 40 traffic citations. These people need to be stopped at the beginning, and I believe that that would prevent further offense. When a person becomes out of control and has disregard for the law and disregard for the life and safety of other people, he easily moves on to larger criminal activities.
Thank you.
Do you have any questions?
Representative Faircloth?
Good morning, Janice.
Good morning. I hope you're enjoying it in Juneau.
I am. Thank you so much for your service on the assembly. two questions. The first one is, I'm considering an amendment to change the word on page 2, line 1, from unpaid to delinquent. And the reason is just to further clarify the actual intent, and that is that if a person does perhaps drive through a construction zone and not realize that they're going to get double fined, that they wouldn't be immediately qualified to lose their vehicle. And so if you could comment on that, and I was going to, at the appropriate time, ask the sponsor of the bill to comment on that. And then the second question that I'd like you to speak to, knowing that that you're in touch with our judicial system on a regular basis and able to talk about that, could you speak to the use of the word used by a person? I know that you did address it in your testimony already, and I support that intent also. But could you speak to that word and the constitutional issue that might be before the legislature?
As far as the delinquency issue versus the unpaid issue, that will be written into the ordinance in Anchorage, and I would hope that it would be considered a friendly amendment, because that certainly is the intent. As far as the constitutionality issue, that has been discussed at length with the attorneys in Anchorage, and the opinion by these attorneys, and of course, law is an art, not a science, but their opinion is that with an appeal process, there's no constitutionality issue. Now, if there are errors, which have been mentioned also, I've discussed that with APD and Chief Kuhn, and they are willing to pick up the expense of recompense for error.
Madam Chair, if I might.
Go ahead.
Thank you. That's all right. I'll hold. Janice, thank you so much for bringing this forward.
You are most welcome. Thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions for Ms. Schamburg? Go ahead, Representative Faircloth.
Thank you. On the point of used, Janice, do we help me recall municipal law on prostitution and the use of a vehicle in an act that is deemed to be connected with prostitution? I believe we take vehicles in the municipality of Anchorage for that act.
Yes, we do, which I consider far less egregious than what we're speaking about today. I don't have that before me. So I cannot tell you what the wording is, if it's used or owned, but I know that initially it's what the person soliciting a prostitute is driving, which is taken. But if it were used and not owned by the person, I would imagine that just like I discussed previously, during the appeal process, it's returned. Because it's not been a huge issue here, I don't think it really happens much.
Thank you, Janice. That was my recollection also, is I think that there may be a clause already in municipal code that's allowing, if you're involved in a crime and you're using someone else's vehicle, that you've sort of surrendered your right to be involved in that crime. Thank you.
Janice, you mentioned that there'd been a lot of discussion and attorneys' opinions with respect to the term used as opposed to owned. Could you get this committee those opinions?
Yeah, I don't know how many written opinions are. There have been a lot of discussions, but I will get you one.
Thank you. Any further questions for Ms. Schamburg? All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Representative Gardner.
Thank you on that point, Madam Chair. I just like to point out that this bill is using the same terminology used that there are, and just adding a fifth element, two of which already say motor vehicle used by a person whose license is suspended, motor vehicle used by a person who fails to carry proof of insurance. This would be motor vehicle used by a person who has.
Excellent point.
Yeah.
Thanks very much. Is there anybody else online who wants to testify? Is there anybody in the audience who would like to testify as to this bill? Okay. Hearing and seeing no further testimony, we will close our public testimony on House Bill 169. Any further questions?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move before the body, the committee today, House Bill 169, draft 25-LS0538/E for consideration.
Thank you. Committee discussion. Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I'd like to move an amendment on page 2, line 1, and to delete the word unpaid and insert the word delinquent.
And that will be a conceptual amendment. Let's take a brief at ease. Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I've been duly corrected by our clerk, and I would like to remove my motion to move the bill without objection. I'd like to offer the amendment on line or page 2, line 1, to delete the word unpaid and insert the word delinquent.
Do we have any objections to that amendment? Hearing no objections, the amendment will be accepted. Representative Olson, you had your hand up.
Did nope.
Any further committee discussion? Representative Faircloth.
Now with the, I'll look to the clerk first. If we're ready to move the bill, I'd like to move from committee HB 169, working 25-LS0538/E from committee with as amended, with zero fiscal note. And individual recommendations. A little help from my friends. I appreciate it.
Do we have any objection to moving the bill? Well, then the bill is advanced.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Gardner. Thank you, Iris. Well, it looks like we still have time, so we will then take up House Bill 101. And we've got a committee substitute here. Would anybody like to move the committee substitute for consideration?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move CS for House Bill 101, working draft 25-LS0262/C.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Heath Hilliard. I'm staff to Representative Gatto, and I'm here to present the CS that you have adopted for discussion purposes. This CS is it's very similar to the previous version that you considered several weeks ago. However, I've distributed to the committee a letter that we received from the Office of Mayor Mark Begich, dated March 5, in which he responded to some of the comments and discussion that had arisen as a result of the previous committee hearing, in which the mayor identified a couple of additional suggestions with regard to how to further clarify statute and the application or misapplication of the ignition interlock and the situation that's arisen in the municipality of Anchorage as a result of some court ruling. We chose to move forward with what would really be suggestion one, judicial imposition of ignition interlock requirement. I do have here in the audience Mr. Jerry Luckup from Legal Drafting, who can respond to his particular structure, because if you note, the suggestion that the mayor's letter included and Section 2 of the bill are slightly different, but I think the end result is essentially the same. The sponsor simply wanted to be responsive to the mayor's suggestions. When we looked at his further suggestion, Section 2, Suggestion 2 on page 2 of his letter dated March 5, we recognize that that suggestion is actually incorporated in another piece of legislation, HB 19, by Representative Meyer, and so that we felt that that would be duplicative and unnecessary, so we didn't include that because it is included in another piece of legislation before the body. So with that, we believe Section 2 does address some of the sentencing confusion that was identified by Mr. John McConaughey from the Municipal Attorney's Office in the previous committee hearing. I have contacted the mayor's office specifically David Ramser, Chief of Staff, and have made an attempt to contact John McConaughey, but I haven't been able to reach them this morning. But they do have a version, or they do have a copy of this blank CS, so they are familiar with it. And again, I do have Mr. Luckup from Legal Drafting who could respond to a specific question with regard to Section 2.
Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess my concern about this is that I only first saw the letter from the mayor last evening, and wasn't sure that the structure of this amendment or the amended CS is actually fits into what the municipality of Anchorage found at fault originally. And I personally have real serious problems when we've held this up, I guess, 2 weeks, and I don't have confidence that, and I think it went to the municipalities of the state to be utilized as law with what arguably may be misconstruction. I'd really love to get some municipal kind of feedback before I vote for something, I guess this would be the proper way to put it. I mean, I think, and overnight, it's really hard to get a hold of people. You know, it's just one day is really tough turnaround on getting feedback.
Through the chair, Representative Sisson, just to let you know that I spoke personally with David Ramser actually 2 days ago and did fax him a copy of this, asking the municipality for their input on this committee substitute. And again, I've made repeated efforts this morning to get in touch with either David Ramser or John McConaughey from the municipal attorney's office. So we certainly are seeking their comment and input on the crafting. With regard to this specific section 2, the drafting request that we made to Mr. Luckup was identifying suggestion 1 on page 1 of the mayor's letter and simply saying, draft this in such a way that you believe it is most correct, but adopting the suggestion that the mayor has made here. And again, we have Mr. Luckup here to address why, and I've spoken with him, but rather than paraphrase him, I would prefer to have him comment as to why he structured the new Section 2 as he did.
Representative Fairclough.
In response, thank you, Madam Chair. In response to Heath and to Representative Sisson, I had the same concerns when Representative Gatto originally brought the bill forward, and we made repeated contact and have had correspondence for over the past 2 weeks, back and forth. You'll see a letter dated February 26th to the committee that was here March 14th. We certainly have one March 5th. We have one in February 27th. So we have been engaging in a conversation with them for some time. And with all due respect, last night as I read legal's response, the bottom line is from our legal perspective, the municipality of Anchorage should have been in compliance all along, and it's not up to them to question whether we have provided the right criteria. But Representative Ledoux and I, in deference to trying to be good partners with the municipality who is seeming to point out things that their discomfort level is not satisfied with, the bottom line, I guess, of what I want to say is the state made the law, and during the argument presented by Mr. Luckup, he convinced me in his response to the mayor that it is the municipality's responsibility to come into compliance, whether they agree with specifically with a preponderance of evidence or, help me, Representative Liu, is it Trier?
Trier effect.
Trier, thank you. A little help from my friends. I appreciate that. Trier evidence that we went through a process 2 years ago where the legislature actually discussed all of those different points along the line, and the bill was modified by the state of Alaska telling the municipality of Anchorage how they wanted them to modify their requirements. And it doesn't matter whether the municipality's legal department agrees or not, they should have complied with the law. And so I appreciate Representative Gatto bringing it to our attention. I appreciate Mr. Luckup going back and trying to be sensitive to the needs of the municipality, but I do think that we're ready to move today on the bill that's before us, and that we have provided the municipality additional time. In addition to what Heath has done in the last 24 hours, I made a call to a cell phone, or not to a cell phone, to Mike Abbott, the deputy municipal director, who I had been in contact with at least on three occasions on this bill. And they are aware. I gave them my staff's phone number for this morning, as well as my cell phone, so that they could call in. My staff could run down any comments. But this is exactly what happened to us. The last time this bill was in front of us, the municipality did not make the time to follow the bill, and it has been duly noticed that we were going to take this up today. So I don't think the municipality has not been afforded an opportunity for the information, which I do respect. I serve there. That's why I originally held up the bill and said that I had questions, because it was beyond me to think that the municipality wouldn't comply. But, you know, our own legal department at the state has convinced me that that's not the case. We're in a standoff, and so our choice is a legal action, which will, from my opinion and in conversation with Co-Chair Ledoux, would waste resources at both a state level and a municipal level. And if we can reach a compromise that is during the normal course of progress in the 25th legislature, then that would be more effective than wasting taxpayers' money in trying to, with a stick, force the municipality to comply. So what you see before you is a compromise from Representative Gatto, with input from Representative Ledoux and myself, and listening to the mayor of Anchorage. And so I support what we have before us, and would love to hear from Mr. Luckup on the time that he took to prepare a second run at pacifying what Anchorage is asking for.
Before I let you go, Heath, I've just got one further question for you, although perhaps Mr. Luckup could answer it. You mentioned that the committee substitute wasn't exactly in the form that the municipality had asked for, because there's another bill before this body right now which would take care of one of the concerns?
Madam Chair, yes. Well, there are sort of two issues. First of all, the mayor's letter includes two different suggestions. The second suggestion on page 2, which is essentially tying ignition interlocks to the issuance of temporary or limited licenses, is incorporated in Representative Myers, well, is the essence of Representative Myers' HB 19. With regard to also some of the
want to cut you off, but what happens if HB 119 doesn't make it all the way through the bodies?
And that, Madam Chair, that's a legitimate question. From a legislative standpoint, Representative Gatto felt that because we have been working and discussing on and off with Representative Meyer about the provisions of his bill, and our decision was largely one of deference to a fellow member. Certainly, we would entertain the committee inserting that second suggestion without question. We simply wanted to defer to Representative Meyer when we were drafting the CS. That was really the main consideration.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Chair Ledoux. Do you ever see Representative Meyer's bill and this bill being joined together because they're similar in content?
Through the Chair, Representative Newman, actually, our offices have been in discussion, and actually our office has been in discussion since before these bills were pre-filed. And the discussion was that the essence, at least the beginning, at the seminal pieces of legislation, that the bills were fundamentally different in their intent. While they both dealt with ignition interlocks, that really Representative Meyer's direction was to go toward connecting the ignition interlocks with the issuance of temporary provisional licenses, to say DMV will not issue one until they can provide proof that a person has had an ignition interlock device installed in their vehicle, whereas this bill simply says municipalities must enforce the ignition interlock laws as they currently are on the books. So we have had discussion, and it was a matter of a decision between the two sponsors that at least at this point in time they were wanting to keep the two bills separate.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Lucca.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Where would you like me to start, Mrs. Chair?
Wherever you would like to start.
Through the chair, I'll sort of get at the idea about the mayor's proposal.
Look up, just for the record, I know who you are, but just for the record, your name and who you represent.
Hi, I'm Jerry Luckup, Legislative Counsel for the Division of Legal Services.
Thank you.
The mayor's letter brought forth two proposals that appeared to me to be alternatives. One is they wanted to adjust the requirement to require ignition interlocks that when someone has a blood alcohol level of 0.16 or greater, adjust who decides that, whether or not the person has that blood alcohol level, and at what phase of the sentencing process that decision is made and the evidence that's required to show that. The other alternative was that we take the courts completely out of this decision and assign it to the Division of Motor Vehicles and have them make the decision, possibly at the time when a limited license is issued or something like that. I was directed basically to work with alternative number one, which is closest to what we already have in statute right now. The mayor's suggestion was to alter AS-12, which is our criminal procedure statute. The trouble with that alternative is that all of our sentencing procedures for drunk driving are in Title 28. And they're in Title 28 for a reason, and I'll get to that in a second. And to throw this into Title 12 would be totally bizarre. It wouldn't, you know, anyone that's dealing with a sentencing or the crime of drunk driving wouldn't know to look in that section for this part of the sentencing process. So I took their suggestion and put it in Title 28, and that's Section 2 of the bill. And it basically tracks their suggestion, but it's in Title 28, which is where it should be if it's a drunk driving provision, and which this is. The greater issue to the committee is what you decide to, how far you decide to go. If you wanted to go with Alternative 2 that the mayor suggested, that would be a totally different approach than Representative Gatto's bill from 2004 that the legislature passed. Representative Gatto's bill at that time, which is why we're all here today, as a statewide solution, said that if someone has a blood alcohol level 0.16 or greater, a court is required to, and the trier of fact at that trial of the determines that the person's blood alcohol level is 0.16 or greater, then the court is required to require an ignition interlock device for that person. Not as necessarily as part of a limited license or anything like that. It's just whenever they regain the privilege to drive, then they're required to have an ignition interlock for a period of time as set in the statute. That was a statewide decision that this legislature made to apply everywhere in the state. And that was part of the Alaska Uniform Traffic Laws Act. And so it applies everywhere in the state, and every municipality is required to comply with that. That's the decision the legislature made 30-some years ago when they created the Alaska Traffic Laws Act. The legislature decided it was important that people, whenever they're traveling throughout the state, would know that the laws are basically going to be similar. And we had this hodgepodge of laws. At times, you go back territorial days and the early 60s in Alaska, and this also occurred in a number of other states, where you travel to maybe 10 miles down the road, this is more relevant down south, 10 miles down the road to another city, and the traffic laws were all different. You were never really had notice of what you're required to comply with. And that's the reason behind this idea of a uniform traffic code so that people are aware of what is expected of them if they travel to another town. And that's what the question all the legislature always has is, if we want to adopt a statewide law, then we put it in Title 28, which is the Uniform Traffic Laws Act, and we require everyone to comply with it. Municipalities are expected to change their municipal code to be consistent with that provision. And at times, the legislature decides that municipalities can be exempted from provisions of that code, and we have made exemptions specifically in response to questions and concerns Anchorage has made. I think I've sort of adequately glossed over some of those questions that were there. I probably open it up to more questions if I can maybe narrow down some issues people might have.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Luckup, you mentioned the Alaska Traffic Laws Act and that every municipality has to comply with this law or any amendments to this law. Have you sent the notice to municipalities, and when is the last time you have sent, or do you think the state has sent a notice to municipalities so that they know that they have to comply to this? And if this law is amended to where we see it now, do you think that the state will send out again a notice to municipalities so that they know what the laws are? Because I'm looking at the small municipalities, City of Houston, with two cop cars, and one police officer on duty, and very limited resources. It's difficult for them to comply with something like this, although they have more than 400 vehicles a day through certain areas because they're on the parks highway. It's difficult for them to try and deal with this stuff, even if they know about it. Again, my question is, have they sent notices, will they send notices, and how do they comply?
Madam Chairman, Representative Newman, each year every municipality that has its own traffic code is required to contact the state and send a copy of all of their traffic code. Every municipality has an option of adopting the Uniform Traffic Laws Act by reference. We specifically say that in Title 28 to make it as easy as possible for municipalities to comply. There hasn't been an issue over the years with any municipality having trouble with complying that has its own traffic code. A lot of the smaller municipalities do not have their own traffic code. They just adopt the state's code. It's usually the larger towns are the only ones with their own traffic code. And those traffic codes are required to be the same. But we have this whole procedure in Title 28 in the first chapter of Title 28 that sets forth the procedure. And municipalities are required to identify their traffic laws using similar numbers to the state code. They can cite specifically the state code and say they can adopt that as their own code if they want to, which is easy. There's basically no cost at all to the municipality. As for how, when the legislature amends laws, how that word gets out, I assume Department Division of Motor Vehicles has a procedure for doing that, but there hasn't, as far as I know, there's never been a problem until this recent difficulty up in Anchorage with regards to this specific statute, which the city prosecutor said he had some issues with of his own and then never notified the assembly about the change in state law.
Representative Newman, you had a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Luckup, if you could assist me in maybe drafting a letter to the smaller communities that I could help distribute it so that they know what's going on, I'm sure it would probably help the chair with some of her smaller communities and maybe Representative Olson too, to make sure that they know what's going on, so that they can help follow that, because they just don't have the resources to do that. So if you could help maybe myself do that, and I think probably some of the other members might be interested in that too. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Luckett, do you have a copy of Anchorage's current traffic code?
There will be one on file with Division of Motor Vehicles. We also have a copy of the Anchorage code over in the legislative library on the first floor of the Terry Miller Legislative Office Building. It's one of the city codes that we do keep fairly current. It's also available online.
And have you, through the course of the last year, went through and checked to see if Anchorage was consistent with the law that was passed by Representative Gatto?
I know that they are not consistent. I have not had to go do that particular research myself. I did a year ago. I did dig that up in response to a question. And as far as this provision goes, they have not amended their code to reflect this change in law in 2004.
From your legal response in written form that I have in my packet today, it appears the law as it stands should be being implemented in its entirety.
Madam Chairman, Representative Faircloth, it's my opinion that the law is in effect, and any Anchorage law that does not, Anchorage code provision that does not, is not, that is not consistent with state law falls by the wayside. The issue is, the problem in this particular case is because this is sort of more beneficial to the defendants. In past situations where changes where the municipality has, there's been a number of cases over the years involving the municipality, usually involving the municipality of Anchorage, where they have attempted to create laws dealing with drunk drivers that were tougher than state law, that were had greater penalties for drivers. Those cases have, because the defendant didn't like that, and because it was less favorable to the defendant would raise these issues. It would go up to the Alaska Court of Appeals or the Alaska Supreme Court, and the Anchorage ordinance would be struck down, and because it was inconsistent with state law. This one is more favorable to a defendant, and so the defendant isn't willing to raise the issue. The municipality of Anchorage doesn't want to raise the issue, saying that their own ordinance is inconsistent with state law and therefore can't be applied. So there's no one really to raise the problem that exists here where they failed to comply. What is happening, though, is that defendants in Anchorage, as opposed to everywhere else in the state, are receiving a lesser sentence than they would everywhere else in the state.
Madam Chair, if I might follow up. What is our option as a state to force compliance of the municipality?
If the municipality would continue to ignore the Alaska Uniform Traffic Laws Act, then the Attorney General would have options with regards to declaratory judgment, or I would probably file a declaratory judgment action myself if I had to do it. There's also some extraordinary writs that could be used, but that would just make the whole situation a little harder.
Thank you, Mr. Luckett.
Mr. Luckup, do you think that this committee substitute, as it has now written, is tight enough so that there's no wiggle room for the municipality of Anchorage to get out of enforcing this thing?
Madam Chairman, there is not any wiggle room for the municipality to get out of enforcing this, and we've also changed the law from 2004, the one that they didn't like. We've also changed that to reflect their concerns and to address all of their concerns, which more properly would have been presented to the legislature back in 2004.
Thank you. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Luckup, again, with smaller communities, if they don't have their own municipal code, traffic code, do you foresee the state, how would the state try and force their will upon smaller communities that don't have that?
There's nothing, Madam Chairman, Representative Newman, there's nothing to force on the local communities. If they don't have their own traffic code, they're using the state code already. Those police officers will cite persons under the state code, under the State Uniform Traffic Laws Act. and the regulations adopted by the Department of Public Safety. So there is no impact on local communities if they do not have their own local municipal motor vehicle code.
Do you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Luckup, I guess my question was, and clearly more to state, is how do municipalities enforce it? I mean, how do they enforce it?
Madam Chairman, Representative Newman, a municipal police officer, just like a state peace officer, a trooper, can cite under the state motor vehicle code and the state regulations. They can cite someone for speeding under that and cite to the state regulation. Or if they're within a municipality that has its own motor vehicle code, they can cite to the municipal motor vehicle code. So a municipal police officer has that option all the time to cite under the state law or the municipal law. The state troopers will usually only cite under the state law, but within a municipality, they could cite under the municipal law. For example, Fairbanks, a number of years ago, eliminated all their municipal prosecutors and all of their municipal criminal enforcement. Fairbanks police officers aren't citing under the municipal code anymore. They're citing under the state laws for all, from what I understand, all traffic offenses committed within the municipality. That's an example of a larger town that decided to eliminate all of their own criminal law enforcement within the municipality and just pass those costs on to the state. And the state is forced to do all of those prosecutions now.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any further questions for Mr. Luckup or for Mr. Hilliard?
I'd like to speak with Heath, if I could ask a question.
Do you want to come forward, Heath?
Can you give me an opinion on why Representative Gatto brought forward a bill instead of moving to the Attorney General and just asking for a declaratory judgment? And if I didn't say that right, please correct me.
Through the chair, Representative Fairclough, my understanding was is that and this was drafted before I began employ with Representative Gatto, so I'm kind of piecemealing from my conversations with him because he felt like that was the remedy most available to him as a member of the legislature, and that he had been the original author of the ignition interlock device, and so as a result, I think he went to what he knew, essentially. In addition, I do know that there was a certain sense with Representative Gatto that
Who has joined us behind
you? Oh. Oh.
But only Sorry. Briefly, so I don't know what you said.
Oh.
I could direct the questions directly to Representative Gatto. Yeah,
they were asking you what the intent was, why you chose to sponsor this as opposed to go to the Attorney General.
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative Gatto, we went through conversation, and while I... coming from the municipality of Anchorage as an elected official, just knew in my heart that the municipality would not be not implementing something that they were unaware of. But our legal counsel has written point by point a response that has led me to believe that indeed, as you presented, that Anchorage truly is just not complying, at least from an administrative level, and that our counsel is saying that we have the authority to require their implementation of the law as we presented it. And Representative Ledoux and myself are wanting to make sure that Anchorage's concerns are taken into account. We've been discussing that for almost 2 weeks now. But Mr. Luckett, who you didn't have a privilege of hearing, I asked him a series of questions. In the end, the question was, what remedy do we have when someone refuses to comply with the law? And he said that that would be to go to the Attorney General and ask for a declaratory, help me.
Okay.
Declaratory judgment.
I like it.
And so I was wondering, again, because we go through the process and we're dealing with two different bodies and the floor votes on two different bodies, why you chose this method. And I realize then that you're being a gentleman, actually, and very, not that you're not always a gentleman, but that you're being kind to Anchorage and trying to come back through and and pass a bill that could take months to go through versus the declaratory judgment. So please, can you give me comments on that?
Sure. I guess it's just a personal philosophy. Had I even known about a declaratory judgment, what we did was contact people in the municipality, including a letter to Mark Begich. Mark Begich responded, and our thoughts were he responded with some ways to correct it. And I said, wow, working with the people involved is probably superior than going to a legal system and forcing an issue. Because what I like is to say, tell me what you, what do I need to do? And if they say, here's what you need to do, and I do it, then it's very difficult for them to say, ah, we changed our mind. But if I do a declaratory judgment, they say, well, there's a loophole in that too. So I'm trying to work directly with the mayor himself. If we get the mayor's support, I think then it probably happens. Because we all want the same thing. How to get there in the shortest amount of time. I mean, we've wanted this for years. And unfortunately, it hasn't happened in the biggest part of the state, the most populous part of the state. So I'll do, Madam Co-Chairs, whatever it takes.
Thank you. Representative Fairclough, follow-up.
Thank you. Just a final conversation. Representative Gatto, thank you for bringing this before the committee and making this representative aware that that the city that I reside in is being non-compliant, basically, and I hope that you'll follow it through. I certainly have learned a lot in understanding the process from a state level in implementing state statute and understanding how uniform traffic laws are enforced, and I appreciate that, but I will leave it to you then to follow this particular bill on the compliance and make a decision ultimately if the hammer has to be brought down and the Attorney General brought in. I leave that to you. And thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Any further questions for Representative Gatto? Representative Paulson.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you entertain a friendly amendment that would hold up any road money until the municipality is in compliance?
I object.
He is always good with these, whether it's shipping containers or ferries, to understand, to go to the source and say, all right, we can behave just as badly as you have behaved.
And follow up, I believe the feds do a pass on a regular basis, particularly with road money.
And that is a very strong connection, the road money and the enforcement of traffic conditions. Well, Madam Chair, as you know, I will fall on my sword to get drunks out of their cars. I just dread, and you know my background, and I don't need to repeat it here, but 50% of the time, they're drinking. 50% of the time. And the other 50, they're probably drinking, and I couldn't tell. But sometimes they're just sloppy drunk. And that's where the impetus for this comes from.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Further questions? Yeah. Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, is there an amendment on the table?
No, not at this time.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
I don't believe that we closed public testimony the last time, so I'm going to open it for public testimony. Is there anybody online? No. Anybody in the audience who wishes to testify? We'll close public testimony and open this for committee discussion. Is there any discussion in the committee? Well, hearing none, can I have a motion?
How about a comment? I believe this is the second time that we haven't had anybody from Anchorage online, or if they have been online, they've chosen not to give us any input, and I am disappointed by that. But I will make a motion if you're ready to accept one to move committee substitute, I believe, for 101 out of committee with attached fiscal note and comments on to the next committee.
You want to specify what committee substitute number?
Yeah, how about 25-LS0262/C. To committee substitute or committee substitute for House Bill 101.
Thank you. Any objections? Hearing no objection, the bill is moved.
It's such an appropriate number. 101 is that major highway.
Highway 101.